Last Wednesday, Robert Mueller called a press conference to say that the report he issued speaks for itself and that he has no interest in testifying before Congress about that report. If Congress now subpoenas Mueller to testify, Mueller would be forced to say when he knew that there was no sufficient evidence of Trump-Russia collusion to continue his investigation, and why he continued for several months after he knew. Mueller, as he has continued to do, made statements in that press conference that Democrats will use to try and impeach the president. With names like Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, Jerry Nadler, Adam Schiff, Elijah Cummings, and Maxine Waters, leaders of the Democratic Party are not very smart or forward-thinking. In fact, they are leaders of the Democrats not because they are smart or ethical, but because they are from extremely liberal districts, which has permitted them to grow old in office. They have painted themselves into a corner on several issues and have no way out. In 2016, Democrats offered up Hillary Clinton as a choice against Donald Trump for president. Using their archaic seniority system, it was Hillary's turn to seize the gavel from Barack Hussein Obama and complete the fundamental change Obama had promised and begun. Like the fable of the tortoise and the hare, Hillary felt that she had the race won and decided she would coast to victory rather than work hard like her opponent. Voters rejected this recycled has-been politician and set into motion a chain of denials by Democrats. They began digging holes for themselves regarding several issues, and they continue to do so today. For the longest time, Democrats insisted that there was no immigration crisis at the U.S.-Mexican border. When that crisis became obvious to even the dumbest liberals, they changed and insisted that it was a manufactured crisis by the president. Now, with more than 100,000 illegal immigrants crossing that border each month, expecting to draw benefits from a naive federal government, Democrats have no way out of that hole they created for themselves without admitting that they were wrong. And that is something they never do. They keep insisting that constructing a wall on the border to impede illegal immigration will not help. How asinine is that position? We have doors on our homes to protect us and make it more difficult for home invaders. Any barrier against this influx of illegal aliens would help. It might not stop them all, but it would make it much more difficult to enter America illegally. Next, Democrats cry about how much the wall would cost. But the savings from stopping illegal immigration would greatly overshadow the cost of that wall. Remember when Democrats dug themselves into a hole during the Brett Kavanaugh Supreme Court hearing? With no supporting evidence, they attacked Judge Kavanaugh based on the testimony of a woman who had made an accusation against him, but could not remember details of what she says happened or even where it happened. Democrats demanded that the woman be believed, regardless of the lack of evidence and in the face of conflicting evidence. And they then glorified a deranged attorney named Michael Avenatti, who trotted out another woman making allegations against Kavanaugh, which were later found to be a complete lie. The mainstream media fell in love with Avenatti, and CNN in particular brought him on camera hundreds of times to attack Donald Trump. The delusional Avenatti announced that he would run for president, and the mainstream media declined to look into his past. Avenatti is now charged with heinous financial crimes and faces up to a lifetime behind bars. Democrats and CNN no longer seek out Avenatti to glorify him, but they have no way out of the hole they dug by glorifying Avenatti without offering a sincere apology to the American people. And that is something they never do. Next, Democrat leaders dug themselves into a hole by jumping to false conclusions about a Trump-Russia collusion in the 2016 presidential race. Michael Tracy of Spectator mirrored my thoughts about this latest miscarriage of justice from a deranged Democratic Party when he wrote that Democrats had been terribly wrong in their false charges, and yet they stay in deep denial, even after the Mueller report cleared Trump of any collusion. If the Mueller report proved anything, it was that Robert Mueller and his Democratic team of prosecutors had an extremely broad mandate to investigate all conceivable angles of the theory that Donald Trump and or his associates colluded with Russia to influence the 2016 election. Page after page of Mueller's report describes the elaborate lengths that Mueller went to ascertain whether there was any truth to the Democrats' claims of collusion. And using the most emphatic language available to a prosecutor, Mueller concluded with virtual certainty that no, there was no evidence of collusion to bring this to court. Democrats went ballistic. For more than 2 years, they had been lying to the American people about collusion, and now Mueller had reluctantly burst their bubble. They apparently never considered simply apologizing to the president and to the American people and getting on with the pressing problems in our country. Instead, they pivoted to a claim that Trump obstructed justice in the Mueller probe. Never mind that there had been no crime committed and nothing, therefore, to obstruct. A notion had percolated in some elements of the mainstream media that Mueller was somehow hamstrung by political pressures to not pursue all possible leads, especially those related to Trump's private business activities. Due to an unspecified combination of angry tweets and Republican objections, pundits cried that Mueller would be prevented from sifting through Trump's so-called dirty real estate dealings, which would be the key to unlocking the door of collusion. But we now know definitively that Mueller operated under no such constraints. In fact, no restraints at all. Democrats call for Trump's tax returns, but Mueller's report makes clear that his roster of aggressive Democratic prosecutors, working with the unlimited resources of the U.S. Treasury and with broad subpoena power, did in fact extensively examine Trump's businesses and his endeavors dating back to at least 2013. Mueller investigated the Trump Organization's engagement in 2013 and 2014 with a firm called the Crocus Group. That's a real estate conglomerate. To establish holdings in Russia long before the prospect of Trump assuming the presidency was even a twinkle in anybody's eye. These dealings were studied in such granular detail that Mueller even describes the share of sales commissions, 3.5%, that the Trump Organization would potentially have reaped from such a deal, as well as the various machinations undertaken by Don Jr. and Ivanka to broker it. Mueller wrote, quote, "The project appears not to have developed beyond the planning stage, and no construction ever occurred," end quote. Mueller then reviewed in copious detail the actions of the notorious fixer, Michael Cohen, to intermediate between Trump and another Russian real estate conglomerate, IC Expert Investment Company, in service of establishing the infamous Trump Tower Moscow deal, about which Cohen admitted to lying under oath. Cohen was subsequently charged with a felony and is now in prison. The chronology of this failed deal was once again laid out meticulously by Mueller, and his ultimate conclusion was that none of it amounted to a conspiracy or illicit coordination with Russia. Another hobby horse of the Trump-Russia internet sleuths that set the tone for much media coverage of this ordeal, going back to 2016, was the allegedly mysterious interactions between the Trump Organization and Alpha Bank, the large Russian commercial bank with which it was claimed Trump had nefarious or collusive dealings. A week before the 2016 election, Hillary Clinton tweeted out a press release declaring that Trump had a secret line of communication to Russia in the form of a covert server. This supposedly sinister server was then the subject of years-long frenzied speculation. Purportedly, one of the Trump Organization's servers had been pinged to a highly suspicious degree by Alpha Bank, which, according to this convoluted hypothesis, meant that Trump and Russia were engaged in surreptitious communications. That theory never made a great deal of sense, but nonetheless, FBI agents raided the Pennsylvania facility which housed this server, and Mueller came to the conclusion as to where it all fit into the larger Trump-Russia conspiracy narrative. Far from establishing that some underhanded election interference discussions had taken place, Mueller looked at the flurry of Russian activity related to Alpha Bank and found no reason to believe that any of it was tantamount to conspiracy. He even interviewed Peter Avin, the head of the bank, and discovered that Putin himself had encountered difficulty making contact with the incoming Trump administration during the time period in question. Putin had stated that he generally did not know the people around the president-elect, Mueller wrote. Another prong of the collusion theory was resoundingly then debunked. That Mueller laid all of this out in exhaustive detail again demonstrates that his investigation scope extended well beyond that of an ordinary prosecutor. He was expected not just to determine whether certain actions were criminally chargeable, but to put forth a coherent narrative of all relative accusations pertaining to the Trump-Russia collusion theory. Contrary to the groundless objections raised by some diehard Democrats, no external forces that we can glean inhibited Mueller from carrying out his investigation, and Mueller has never claimed that he was not able to continue. And Mueller's conclusions were devastating for collusion profiteers. Now, some Democrats apparently feel that Mueller's finding of no conspiracy or coordination simply indicates that he failed to pursue relevant leads. But that stupendously misrepresents the report to the point of absurdity. Not only did Mueller aggressively pursue innumerable leads, he pursued some of which went far beyond the pale. All bases were covered by Mueller. So for the collusion proponents to persist in affirming their bogus theory, which now more resembles an article of religious faith than a political or legal position, is downright comical. As if they somehow had deduced evidence of collusion that Mueller's investigation of more than 2 years failed to uncover. Still, they can produce no such evidence. Just as with Adams Schiff's promise that there was a mountain of evidence to show collusion between Trump and Russia, was all in his devious mind, it just goes to show that these sad, angry Democrats are committed to digging themselves deeper and deeper into a hole of paranoia and desperation. But now the tables have turned. While Robert Mueller refused to look into issues emanating from Democrats, Attorney General William Barr is determined to uncover evidence as to how the government agencies were used to destroy Trump's candidacy, and how, after Trump was chosen by the American people to be their president, these same federal agencies conspired to mount a coup against him. That is, if such evidence exists. Unlike the dishonest Democrats, conservatives don't proclaim that there is a mountain of evidence there, only that something smells rotten and should be investigated. We will await the Inspector General's long-anticipated report, which should come out in the next few weeks. If that and the investigation authorized by Attorney General Barr into Hillary Clinton and others involved in destroying Trump finds the evidence of a coup attempt that it appears has happened, that means that Barack Hussein Obama and the Democratic Party will have been disgraced beyond measure, and the holes they have dug for themselves will collapse upon them. As a conservative, I want only the truth, and the truth shall set us free. Here's a partial list of the damage done by the left and the Democratic Party. The most obvious, and therefore the one more and more Americans can resonate with, is the near destruction of most American universities as places of learning. In the words of Harvard professor Steven Pinker, an atheist and a liberal, outside of natural sciences and a few other disciplines such as mathematics and business, universities are becoming laughingstocks of intolerance. If you send your children to a university, you are endangering both their mind and their character, not to mention their keg parties. There is a real chance that they will be more intolerant and more foolish after college than they were when they entered college. When you attend an American university, you are taught to have contempt for America and its founders, to prefer socialism to capitalism, and to divide human beings by race and ethnicity. You are taught to shut down those who differ with you, not to debate them. And you are taught to place feelings over reason, which is a guaranteed route to eventual evil. In their world, pie ain't square. You are. The left has ruined most of the arts. Here are three examples, which are chosen because they are scatological, a favorite form of left-wing artistic expression. Before the left poisoned the arts, art was intended to elevate the viewer or listener. But to the left, elevate is a meaningless term. They are far more at home depicting urine, fecal matter, and menstrual blood. In 2011, a lifelike German sculpture depicting a policewoman squatting and urinating received an award from a prestigious German foundation. In 2013, the Orange County Museum of Art in California placed a huge 28-foot sculpture of a dog outside the museum, where it periodically urinates a yellow fluid onto the museum wall. In 2016, one of the most prestigious museums in the world, the Guggenheim in New York, featured a pure gold working toilet, which visitors were invited to use. The name of the exhibit was America. So the visitor could literally relieve themselves on America. Thanks to the left, the Philadelphia Orchestra, one of the greatest orchestras in the world, allowed itself to become a voice of leftist hatred. It featured the premiere of Philadelphia Voices, a political rant put to musical garbage. On the left, all of this is considered art. Indeed, that's part of the left's poisoning of everything. It's politicalization of everything. And the left is increasingly poisoning sports. In most football stadiums, we cannot attend an NFL game without being subjected to left-wing contempt for America and its flag. Only there can you dash 100 yards, be dumb as a stump, and make millions of dollars a year. So, too, we cannot watch late-night television anymore if we simply desire to be entertained before drifting off to sleep. Jimmy Kimmel, Stephen Colbert, and other hosts have changed late-night television into left-night television. Why merely be funny when you can use your monologues to advance your left-wing agenda? The left has also poisoned mainstream religion. Mainstream Protestantism, non-Orthodox Judaism, and much of the Catholic Church, including and especially Pope Francis, are essentially left-wing advocacy groups with religious symbols. The left is destroying the unique American commitment to free speech. Almost half of incoming college freshmen do not believe in free speech. They deem it hate speech. Merely taking issue with a left-wing position is, in the left's view, hate speech. They do not understand that the whole point of free speech is allowing the expression of opposing ideas, including what we consider hate speech. The left is also poisoning our children with its commitment to ending male and female as distinct categories. And the left has poisoned race relations. America is the least racist, multiracial society in the world. On a daily basis, Americans of every race and ethnicity get along superbly. But the black left and the white left constantly poison young minds with hate-filled diatribes against white people, white privilege, systemic racism, black-only dorms, black-only graduations, lies about events in places like Ferguson, Missouri, and the like. The left has made innumerable women unhappy, even depressed, with its decades of lying about how female sexual nature and male sexual nature are identical, leading to a hookup culture that leaves vast numbers of young women depressed, and its indoctrination of generations of young women into believing they will be happier through career success than marital success. And in some ways, scariest of all, the left is poisoning our children with its commitment to ending male and female as distinct categories. One of the great joys of life, celebrating one's sex, is now deemed nothing more than a hateful idea in many of our children's schools. If you treasure American and Western civilization, fighting the left is the greatest good we can engage in today. The Democratic Party and its media allies have created a monster. It goes by two names, political correctness and identity politics. Both involve what you can say and what you can believe. While Democrats won't admit authoring the ever-expanding handbook of acceptable speech, they seem to be the only group left in America which feels free to express their views. The Cato Institute released a national poll that found an astonishing 71% of Americans believe political correctness is silencing discussing things in society, discussions we need to have, while 58% said they had political views they are afraid to even share. Not surprisingly, the majority, 53% of Democrats, said they did not feel the need to self-censor, while a supermajority of Republicans, 73%, and independents, 58%, felt the need to keep some political beliefs to themselves to keep from being attacked. So, what's causing this phenomenon? The real power behind political correctness comes from identity politics, and progressives have been incorporating it into their agenda for decades. At its core, identity politics claims oppressive forces, such as racism and sexism, virtually dominate our political and social institutions. While no society can end bigotry outright, identity politics ignores the reality that America has advanced individual rights and equalities further than any other nation on earth. This is because identity politics acts as an all-or-nothing philosophy. It claims that America's virtues and laws have harbored these evils rather than opposed them. By design, it attacks the integrity of our institutions with unfounded claims of systemic racism and institutional oppression. While we may see America as a self-governed, free society, supporters of identity politics see a tyranny by the majority. As such, they put little value in furthering their agenda through persuasion and logic. Instead, the movement advances primarily through groupthink, intimidation, and slander. While national discourse has been plagued by political correctness, it is merely a symptom, not a virus itself. It is identity politics that prejudicially boxes individuals into a group identity: whites, blacks, gay, straight, female, male, etc., where each must wear their group's history like a scarlet letter, either as oppressor or oppressed. To enforce this, groups are given limits on approved speech. In other words, they believe that individual expression should be restricted by your race, your gender, or various identity status, unless to reinforce another group's talking points. This bigotry is supported by concepts such as cultural appropriation, where different cultures or races are not allowed to adopt things from other cultures. My friends, we live in difficult, difficult times. We live in times that fly in the face of Martin Luther King's dream for a nation that judges on character, not race. Democrats in the media are able to use identity politics relevant by furthering the notion that racism and sexism lurk around every corner. I thank you for listening today. There's much more I could say, but time is of the essence. I'm here every week. I thank you for listening. And you can contact me by sending me an email at comments@tomjoyner.net. comments@tomjoyner.net. See you next week. Same time, same station.